Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Polonius, speaking to his son Laertes, who's going off back to his university in Paris, in Hamlet, of course, says to him, that those friends thou hast, hold them to you with bonds of steel, something like that. But be careful, because lots of people who may want to be your friend aren't worth befriending. I mentioned that as a way of getting down to the basic business of the book by Rachel Birchie, who is our guest tonight. MWF Seeking BFF is the title. Rather enigmatic. I think we better decode that.
It does stand for Married White Female Seeking Best Friend Forever. It is sort of a play on, you know, the want ads of, I guess, people used to do.
Did you actually put that in any want ads column or up on the internet?
I did. I put it on the internet. I wrote an essay in which I sort of said, here is what my want ad would be. And it was Married White Female Seeking Best Friend Forever. Fluency in Entertainment Weekly, preferred but not required.
So you had just come to Chicago. You left a lot of good friends behind in New York, where you sort of grew up, though you did spend a few years in college at Northwestern before you went back to New York. And you came along with your boyfriend, soon to be your husband. So you are not totally alone, to be sure.
Correct. Yeah. No, I wasn't totally alone. And I think for a little bit, I was content without the close friends because I was so excited to finally be in the same city as my boyfriend. And it was, you know, after we had settled in and gotten married and settled into our life a little bit that I realized this still isn't enough for me. I need some friends to round out, you know, a happy and full life here.
But they tell you that in a good marriage, your best friend is your spouse.
Some people say that. I would beg to differ. I think that, you know, I always say my husband can't be my best friend. You know, he's my boyfriend. He's not my girlfriend.
Yeah. So that seems to be a pretty important distinction. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think you can't get everything from everyone.
And who are you going to talk about him with?
Exactly. Who am I?
Another best friend.
That's exactly what I say. I can't complain to my husband about my husband. So I
well,
need
yes,
friends
you can.
For that.
That often happens.
It's true. I probably do. But it works out better when I can vent to my girlfriends about my husband and then...
So you settled upon a plan, and the plan was literally to advertise and ask people, where could I find some good friends? And then to go on a weekly searching for best friend date.
Correct. I did 52 friend dates over the year, and I found them every which way, starting by getting set up and then placing the want ad and going on the internet and meeting people through, you know, various social networking and even, you know, handing my card to the woman next to me on the airplane or leaving a note for a waitress.
But basically what you had to communicate, whether in a note or by turning to the person next to you on the L train or going to the airport, you have to say, I'd like to see whether you and I can be friends. Let's get together for a trial date.
Exactly.
That's not an easy thing to say, I should
think. Really not. It's tricky, and there's no real kind of protocol for it the way there is for asking someone out on a romantic date. I was pretty confident that people would, you know, look at me and think I was totally crazy and weird, but I was lucky, actually, that I found the opposite to be true.
No turndowns?
I don't think so. I think there might have been, you know, there were a couple emails that I would send to women who I had met that weren't returned. I didn't get rejected, but I did maybe get ignored a couple of times.
What is a best friend or what is a good friend? How does one capture the essence of friendship?
You know, the author Ann Patchett once wrote this essay, and I quote it in the book, and she said, I think the kind of intimacy I'm looking for is not the women I can tell my deepest, darkest secrets to, but the woman I can call and say, why do I have 4 jars of pickles in my refrigerator? And I use that as an example because I think that's just what I was looking for. I had these old friends I could, you know, pour my heart out to over the phone, but I wanted someone nearby who I could just call and say, you know, why do I have these pickles in my fridge? Or are you available? You want to go get brunch? Just something easy and local so I could have some more face-to-face time with friends.
I'm, as you may have noticed, rather older than you. And it does seem to me that the best friends I've got, or rather the friendships that matter the most to me, are the oldest friendships that I've got. There is even one guy who grew up with me in Bensonhurst, the neighborhood in Brooklyn. Both he and I are rather senior types by now. Strangely, our ages have remained more or less parallel. And he's in New York, and I'm not, and haven't been for many, many years. But we are still rather frequently in touch, literally with phone calls, as if we were two young women chattering away.
I love that. And that's true, you know.
We don't do it every week, but there is that continuing contact.
Yeah, absolutely. And my two, you know, my two BFFs that I talk about throughout the book are two women who I met when I was 10 and when I was 15. And mm-hmm. Sarah, who I met when I was 10, is to this day my oldest friend. And we also keep in touch. And I just talked to Callie earlier this evening. So I certainly wasn't looking to replace them so much as supplement them. So I had people I could spend, you know, physical time with and look at them across.
And as you talked to her tonight, did you ask about how those four pickle jars got into your refrigerator?
You know, not tonight, but, you know, I think we talked a lot about how she cleaned out her closet this weekend. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not always the deep, important stuff. It's just the kind of day-to-day.
You know that there's a lot of research in social psychology and in sociology about friendship.
Absolutely.
One decisive finding, have you ever encountered this? Answers the question, what's the average length of a friendship?
I think that I have read, and I want to say 5 years. Is that correct?
Well, for a really good friendship, the average length is a little bit less than 7 years, 6.8, as calculated over thousands and thousands of interviews with people who are talking about their good friends.
That's
and that's kind of sad when you really think that through. Why shouldn't it last a lifetime?
It's true, and that's, I think, something that we all have a lot of trouble accepting, that some friendships aren't going to last forever. And there's other research I read recently that said women feel more guilt when they break up with a friend than they do when they break up with a romantic partner. And it's because this mm-hmm. idea that friendships are supposed to last forever. It's not like a relationship where you either perhaps break up or get married. So it's really, it's tough. And it's,
have you had that experience? The breakup of a good friendship?
Not recently. You know, I still have this memory of when I was in eighth grade and I got a letter in the mail from a friend. And to this day, it's the hardest breakup I've been through. And it was a letter I got in the mail I was at summer camp, and she sent me a letter in the mail to say, basically, I don't want to be friends with you anymore.
Did she give her reasons?
Not really. And, you know, when you're in eighth grade, it all seems...
It still hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was years ago, but I still remember it very vividly, probably more so than my romantic breakups.
Now, we need to join you on your quest for new friends and the 52 female dates that you had over 52 weeks.
Yes.
Over the range of a year. And we'll go directly to that with Rachel Birchke after we pause for these words.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
I just did the ultimately unpleasant thing. I mispronounced my guest's name. It's Rachel Birchke. And we'd better do a little orthography here and get clear on the spelling, because you may very well want to pick up a copy of this book. Birchke is spelled B-E-R-T-S-C-H-E. That's in the German style. Belche is the way they would probably say it.
Exactly.
In Germany.
Yeah.
MWF seeking BFF. So let's join you in your adventures or misadventures.
So you want to hear about a few of my craziest moments?
Yeah.
Well, I really tried to do everything. So I did, you know, speed friending, which is sort of like speed dating, but for girlfriends. I did a site called rentafriend.com, which is kind of what it sounds like. And
you pay for it.
I paid for a woman to spend the afternoon with me. And she was actually a really, you know, I was a little skeptical of who might end up on that site, but she was a really nice person who I would have been perfectly happy to be friends with. But I think the lesson learned was that friendship should be reciprocal and you shouldn't be paying someone. So, but you never know. We could still strike up a friendship again. I did, as I mentioned, leave a note for a waitress who seemed really wonderful. And, you know, I said to my husband at the restaurant, she could be my new BFF. She's great. And he said, why don't you leave her a note? And I thought, oh, I couldn't. It's crazy. But he kind of said, if you're going to do it, you have to do it. If you're going to, you know, commit to this year of friending. So I did. I left her a note and I said, I live around the corner with my husband. I think you seem like someone who is great and we could be friends. Do you want to have lunch sometime? And I didn't expect to hear from her. And the next morning I had an email from her. She'd written right after her shift.
And how well did that one work out?
It worked out well. She was, you know, we met for lunch and she was great. I sort of joked that I thought she was maybe even too cool for me. She seemed like someone who everyone kind of so charismatic that everyone wanted to be friends with her. I wasn't. She mentioned she got another note from another girl that night.
Is she a friend of yours right now?
She is. Yeah. Yeah.
She made the cut.
She made the cut. Yes. Uh-huh.
How many did? How many of the 52 that you had lunch with or otherwise did something with are now to be counted as your friends?
Well, you know, at the end of the year, I said about 22, but it's been another year since then because this was in 2010. And some of those people have moved away, and some of them, the friendship has faded a bit after I realized that I was the only one really doing a lot of the work. So I guess now about 15, which I think is a pretty great number. And on top of that, I've made some friends through book clubs and other things I've joined. So I have a pretty full social...
BFF is best friend forever.
Correct.
And it indicates a singularity. There must be... There can only be one best.
It does.
Is there a one best?
You know, not yet. I think one of the lessons learned was really that... This BFF ideal that we kind of hold on to from when we were teenagers, a lot of women isn't necessarily the same when we're 30. And so now I say that I definitely have a great bouquet of friends. But, you know, sometimes you're right. I say I have two BFFs. So I think it's a term that we use maybe loosely.
Friendship is something we idealize, and you feel very positive about having friends.
Yes.
And you probably think that one way to define a good friend is they'll stand by you no matter what.
I do.
But listen to Oscar Wilde, who was a cynic, to be sure. He says anybody can sympathize with the sufferings of a friend, but it requires a very fine nature to sympathize with a friend's success. You catch that?
I do. I do. And it's a good point. It can be that I've seen it, you know, success can hurt a friendship. But I'm really lucky. My new friends have been so happy for me in you know, publishing this book. So I think I lucked out. I found some good ones.
Well, bright young women still discovering all the joys of life might be able to form friendships where they don't resent the other person's sudden success or greater preferment or what have you. But perhaps literary types and perhaps just – and professors – and Lord knows what else, and politicians, they may have very good friends, but if the good friend vaunts or vaults forward with tremendous success, you sometimes get rather complicated ambivalence, at least, maybe even worse. There's a great, you know the maxims of the Duc de la Rochefoucauld?
No.
One of the great cynics, and his maxims are very well known. They're all cynical and pessimistic about human experience. He has one which says... in French, it runs, dans l'adversité de nos meilleurs amis, nous trouvons quelque chose qui ne nous déplaît pas, which translates as, in the misfortunes of our best friends, we find something that is not displeasing.
It's probably, I hate to say that that's true.
it's what the Germans call Schadenfreude.
Right, exactly.
And that word is now.
Yeah, well, ever since that song from Avenue
borrowed.
Q.
Yeah. Somebody else who expressed the very same thing and in a totally self-revealing way is the writer Gore Vidal, who was quoted as having said, he wrote it someplace, it is not enough that I succeed. My friends must fail. Isn't that bitter?
It is. It's too bad. And I hope that that's, you know, I'm laughing because, of course, we've all been there for sure. But I hope that, you know, when we make friends as adults, that it's a little more, we make this conscious effort.
And there's another lesson about friendship. I'm giving you the opposite side. I'm giving you the cynicism, or at least the pessimism, about the lastingness and the eternal value of friendship. Mm-hmm. And never has that been better expressed than by the great American blues singer, Bessie Smith, who really is one of the founders of the whole blues style. And we're going to listen to this. It runs about 3 minutes. It's worth hearing the whole thing. Here is Bessie singing about how you're... what happens to your friends when times get tough on you. By the way, the person, the accompaniment is just piano and trumpet, and the man on the trumpet is the very young Louis Armstrong. This was recorded in Chicago in the 1920s.
Once I lived a life of a millionaire, spending my money, I didn't care. I carried my friends out for a good time, buying bootleg liquor, champagne and wine. When I began to fall so low, I didn't have a friend and no place to go. So if I ever get my hand on a dollar again, I'm going never get on my feet again. Then I'll meet my long lost friend. It's mighty strange, without a doubt. Nobody knows you when you down and out. I mean, when you down and out.
In the very last line, we learned that she's thinking about male friends. No man can use you when you're down and out. But more broadly, that really is a very skeptical, cynical view of the evanescence of friendship. That friendship depends a good deal upon what you can do for others and what they can get from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. I've heard from a lot of women since writing this book who are sort of skeptical of especially female friendship. They seem to think that there's this idea that female friendship is so competitive and kind of catty that they often say, you know, I can't have female friends. I only want to have male friends. And it's interesting to hear that because I think it's clearly a bit of a generalization, certainly.
Then in the plots of some kinds of bitter comedies and movies or on television, a great line is, "He slept with my best friend."
Yeah.
You run into that as a plot device very often.
It's true. It's true. That is certainly one of the things that will end a friendship.
So that's betrayal by the best friend.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, I think, the number one friendship rule, right? You don't, exes and romantic partners of any time are off limits.
You know, I can't resist talking like the social psychologist I am, or was. A man named Fritz Heider, H-E-I-D-E-R, did the definitive work on the nature of friendship. Well, earlier, the sociologist Zimmel wrote a great deal about friendship. But Heider said that essentially what it comes down to is congruent evaluation of shared objects, by which that sounds jargonish. But what he means is essentially if you like the same things and you dislike the same things, really disliking the same thing binds you just as closely to somebody as you're both liking the same thing. But having essentially identical tastes, interests, values, preferences.
Yeah, well, when you mention that about disliking, I think of this research I read about what's called, I guess they call it the negativity bond. Mm-hmm. And this idea that, I guess this is, in this case, disliking the same person will sometimes bond you more than liking the same person will. And as I spoke to you about earlier, I met with a professor at the University of Chicago who told me about a lot of research and sort of asked his advice for what the things I should
That's
do.
That's John Cacioppo, who is my successor. He holds, he runs the doctoral program in social psychology at the University of Chicago, which I did run until about 7 or 8 years ago.
That's so amazing. And yes, he was generous enough to meet with me and kind of give me his advice. And he said what you did was find some people, start off with similar interests, go to a book club or go to a cooking class and meet people who are interested in what you are. You start with like-minded people, you'll probably be able to find other, shared interests or disinterests.
You've got some very interesting comments on what to do as you're chatting with people that you want to befriend or want to test out for friendship. And I think they're very wise and very correct. This is sort of the technique of making friends once you've met somebody and are chatting away just a bit. And I'd like to chat about that with you after we pause for a full update on the evening's news. For that, to the WGN Newsroom and Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
I'm talking with Rachel Birchie tonight, who went on a quest to find new friends when she moved to Chicago and succeeded in locating a number of them. Out of the 52, what do you call them, girl dates or something like that?
I call them friend dates.
Friend dates.
They were almost all women, one man.
Oh, there was one man in the batch as well.
I did go out with a gay man. I said, I need my gay best friend like they have, you know, Will and Grace. And he was a wonderful guy as well.
So. Has he remained a good friend?
You know, we're not as closely in touch because we met when we were taking improv together. And I'm not taking improv anymore, so we're not as closely in touch. But, you know, Facebook makes it easy to at least be in touch a little.
Everybody has experience with friends, interests in friends, and either fulfillment through friends or a kind of a quiet loneliness, maybe even the Thoreau kind of quiet desperation because you don't have enough friends or any real friends. I say that because we are now opening the phone lines and are very interested in hearing what our listeners have to say or, of course, what they want to ask of Rachel Birchie. 312-591-7200, 312-591-7200. For any questions, to the author of MWF, Seeking BFF, My Year-Long Search for a New Best Friend, or for that matter, a story you want to tell us, or your own views on the nature of friendship and what makes it work and what doesn't. So once again, the lines are open. We'll get to you probably within the next 7 or 8 minutes, 312-591-7200. And of course, for internet listeners at some great distance, if you want to be in touch to tell us about friendship in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia or in Dusseldorf in Germany or wherever, the best way for email is extension 720 at WGNradio.com. Simply extension 720 at WGNradio.com or for phones again, 312-591-7200. When you had these dates, searching for friends or testing out the possibility of friendship, what's the best way to go about it?
I think the first thing to think about is really this idea of storytelling. I think it's very easy when we meet new friends. We fall back on the same old questions. Where are you from? What do you do? Mm-hmm. You know, what did you major in even?
Did you notice that as I met you tonight in the green room, so-called, before we came on the air, that's just what I did with you?
Yeah.
And I asked you about your academic history, about where you were from and so on.
Exactly. And it's an easy thing.
It's a mistake on my part then.
Well, if we were trying to be best friends, perhaps. Yeah. And I think it's a really good idea to kind of rely on stories. And I actually spoke with a psychologist named Ron Brofman, and he and his brother Ori Brofman wrote a book called Click, The Magic of Instant Connections. And it looks at this idea of why do we click with the people we do? And I spoke with him, and he said to me correctly, if I listened to you on the phone with one of your best friends, you're probably not asking questions back and forth. You're probably telling stories. And just tonight when I spoke to my best friend, that was the case. We told a story of what happened to us over the weekend and her closet cleaning. And so you really want to try to do those, tell a story about yourself, and those questions will get filled in. That information will be filled in the stories.
What about telling your troubles? I've got a wonderful quotation here from Marlene Dietrich, of all people, who said, it's the friends you can call up at 4 a.m. that really matter.
And I think that's there's some truth to that. It's similar to the idea of that Ann Patchett quote. Those are the people we can kind of wake up and tell our troubles to. Absolutely. I think sometimes you want to be careful of telling too many troubles too quickly. If you're meeting someone for the first time, it can be a lot to unleash on them.
That would not be a good gambit for a first
meeting. Yeah, it's not a first friend date, but maybe a tenth. And also, you know, I do say I think that laughter is a great indicator pretty early on if a friendship is going to blossom or not. I went on some friend dates where there was a lot of silence and it felt like you could hear the crickets in the background because we just weren't connecting on that level and there was a lot of awkward moments, whereas there were other dates within 10 minutes we were laughing together like old friends.
Well, I should think that some of the people with whom it didn't work might have, under other circumstances, been capable of becoming or appropriate for becoming good friends, but that they weren't as comfortable with the situation. It is, after all, a rather challenging and odd situation for a stranger to say, let's go have lunch or let's do this or that. I want to see whether we can be friends. And that might, some people are a little bit more shy than you are, a little bit more self-doubting, a little bit more anxiety-prone than you are, might have some difficulty with that particular situation.
Perhaps. I tried not to kind of lay it out like that, you know, and but just to say, you know, I often say I didn't say to these people, I'm looking for a new best friend, the way you wouldn't say to someone you were dating, I'm looking for a husband. I think it's implied that if we're, you know, going out to lunch, that we're probably both hopefully interested in becoming friends or learning more about each other. And usually I hope that I followed up with mostly people who seemed genuinely interested as well. But you're right. And sometimes it can feel like a lot of pressure when you're on this date.
Going back to the view of the nature of friendship and friendship formation that I was talking about before, as illuminated by some particular psychologists, did you find that the ones who become, who pass the test and sort of become potentially good friends, that they are more, that they have convergent judgments converging with yours, that their political views are the same, their aesthetic interests are the same, that you are more similar people than those who didn't make the cut?
I did find that, and but that's something about similar values, as you say.
Yeah.
I think at first I was being kind of set up, quote unquote, with people who were very similar to me on paper. We were, you know, maybe both Jewish or both white or both from the East Coast, and that was not necessarily an indicator of a friendship. But there are women, you know, one great friend of mine had a very different upbringing than me. She's, you know, the daughter of a pastor and one of eight kids and was homeschooled, and our on paper we're very different, but our values, you know, our political leanings, for example, are similar, and we value the same things, and so we did become close friends.
You're probably both enthusiasts for President Obama.
Correct.
What if you ran into somebody who really thought very ill of President Obama and who at the same time announced that she was clearly and strongly a conservative and thought liberalism was all wrong? Could you have befriended her?
Well, I like to think about, you know, what they say about not talking about religion or politics on, on a first date. So I think if that debate came up in, on our first date, that would probably, it would be very likely it wouldn't lead to a second date. And often when I have found, when I found that that is the case, it is usually on the case on both sides. I didn't find that there were a lot of people who were dying to be friends with me, and I thought, no thanks.
Well, there are a lot of people who are dying, or at least very eager to talk with you tonight. And we're going to go to the phones right after we pause for a quick round of commercials. But I see some lines are still available. So if you want to be heard and if you have something to tell us or something to ask, get in there quickly at 312-591-7200. 312-591-7200. On to your contributions after these words.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Our guest tonight is Rachel Bertschy, B-E-R-T-S-C-H-E, and her book, MWF Seeking BFF, subtitle My Year-Long Search for a New Best Friend, is published only within the last few months by, who is that? By Ballantine Books.
Correct.
And our number is 312-591-7200. If you've been trying to reach us and hit the busy signal, we've cleared one or two lines, so try again, and you may very well get through. 312-591-7200 for anything you want to say or ask about the making of new friends and the keeping of friends. Here is the first caller. John joins us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My question was, when you went on your dates, did you or your date ever, like, maybe get in a lull in the conversation, maybe pull out your iPhone or your iPod? And also, do you think those devices desocialize people?
What an interesting
question.
Make it
hard to make friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I try very hard, especially on these first dates, not to pull out my iPhone. And I am someone who is a little bit addicted to my phone sometimes. But I do think that it can hurt, you know, someone's feelings in a way. It makes you feel like I'm not good enough. I'm not entertaining or interesting enough to keep your attention. So I really tried to put my phone on vibrate and keep it in my bag. And I do think that there is this idea that it does desocialize us because it's so easy to hide behind your iPhone and your iPad or Facebook.
But if you put it on vibrate and put it in your bag, but then it starts vibrating, would you answer or would you?
Oh, no. No, no, no. I don't hear my phone when it's vibrating. So I chose not to, you know, to give my full attention to the person I was spending my time
Sounds
with.
Good. Yes, sir. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
On to the next. 312-591-7200. And next up is Herbert. Good evening.
Good evening. I have a friend that distinguishes between friends and acquaintances. I just was wondering how you would separate the two.
That's a really good question. And I think, to me, acquaintances are people I know, people I might say hello to on the street if we passed each other by, but not people who I would necessarily, the two of us wouldn't necessarily spend time together on our own. We're people who know each other, but we're not, you know, I think of friends as people who I might call up on the phone or shoot an email to say hello and check up on how they're doing and that I know what's going on in their life on a kind of constant basis.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We thank you, sir. What's the difference, have you thought about this? You must have, between female friendships and male friendships?
I have thought about it a lot, and I think, you know, there is this idea that researchers say that female friendships are face-to-face and male friendships are side-to-side, this idea that women like to sit across the table from each other and talk and talk and talk, which was what I was looking for, whereas men might like to sit and watch a game or play golf or, you know, do activities together. And this is not to say that female friendship is more important than male friendship, but our needs are a little bit different. And I certainly found that my husband, when I tried to force this friendship quest on my husband and say, oh, well, you know, what friends, new friends have you made? And maybe you should spend more time with friends. He would say to me, don't friendship me. you know, his needs are different. And he has some old friends, like you mentioned you have, that he talks to on the phone every now and then and feels really connected to and doesn't have this need for, you know, men to spend time with all the time.
Because you told me he works in a law firm.
Yes.
Which means he encounters a lot of people.
Correct.
Through his work day by day. And basically, that's how we find people to befriend.
Right.
We have contacts with them and we think, gee, there's an interesting person and something might develop. But that doesn't happen with him?
You know, he's definitely friends with some people in his office. I don't think he spends a lot of time with them outside the office. Every now and then, certainly. But his close friends in the area, there aren't, you know, a ton of them. And the ones that they are, some are family and some are people we went to college with. There are only a few new friends since we've moved mm-hmm. here.
We've got room now on the board for more calls. I say to my friends, get in there. Want to hear from you about friendship. Your own theories or, for that matter, your own experiences with regard to making and losing friends. And are there enough friends in your life? And if not, why not? Is there a surfeit of friends, too many, and you're wondering how to get rid of some of them? Let us hear from you on all of that. The lines are open. I want those calls quickly at 312-591-7200. And next one is Mark. You're on the air, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. I have a counter observation before I offer my question. In addition to the awkward silence of an initial get-together, there's also what might be called the eloquent silence of long-established friends or seasoned marriages, and that's where the people feel no need to talk because they just love almost wallowing in one another's presence, or if not wallowing, they savor one another's presence, and they just love the silence of being together. What I wanted to ask about and offer a couple of my own observations is, did you find any research about men who tend to have mostly female friends or women who tend to have mostly male friends? Two observations that I would offer, first of all, is that we wouldn't dream of trespassing on a friend's marriage. And I love watching the marriages of my lady friends. I love being around these couples. And the other thing is that we apparently are able to make this work because we don't feel an urgency to make a girlfriend out of everyone. I mean, that's a bit of hyperbole, but what I'm saying is that we figure if it's going to happen, it'll happen, but we're not going to try to put it under pressure. And we're just going to enjoy the ladies we know without having romantic expectations. If they happen, they happen. But if they don't, fine.
But, you know, that raises yet another question, which is either deeper or interior or just correlate to what you've been asking and saying. And that is, can a man, a heterosexual male and female, two heterosexual persons, be merely friends and of the same age range and so on, be merely friends, or is there always somehow an extra sexual or sexualized dimension to their interaction?
My own,
even if they never go to bed together.
My own experience has been that although sexual feelings are a potential, they need not predominate. I think the key word there is priority. I think it's natural to have attractions between the genders, just as it would be between two gay men or gay women. But I believe that if the two people are rational and moral people, they don't have to let those sexual feelings get the upper hand. And my answer would be, yes, it is possible to have the friendship without sexuality getting in the way.
I think I would agree with you. I think that it is possible, but I do think it can be hard sometimes to form those friendships. When I was looking for, you know, my friend dates, and I met a man who seemed like a really nice guy, and he was a heterosexual man who had a girlfriend, and I mentioned to my husband, you know, do you think I could ask him out on a friend date? And my husband said no. And he's not the jealous type, but I think the act of asking him out, he thought, would so easily be misconstrued and kind of create a lot of opportunities for misunderstandings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Has formal research looked at these relationships, though?
Well, you know, there's the research that I found the most interesting is actually that women, both women and men, get their emotional fulfillment from relationships with women. So women really need female friends to get that kind of emotional nourishment, and men need women, female friends, or perhaps their wives. And what's really interesting about it is when, you know, a man and a woman, when a marriage ends, women kind of end up faring a little better immediately because they have friends to fall back on for their emotional fulfillment, and men have lost the woman in their life who they often do go to. So everyone needs a woman in their life.
Thank you, sir. Glad to have heard from you. But, you know, I don't think you can turn a long-standing platonic friendship between a man and a woman into, ultimately, an intimate, sexually intimate friendship. I've got a story to tell you. It happened some years ago, but these are people I knew rather well. They were both colleagues at a university I taught at, not the University of Chicago, where I spent a lot of years after that. They were young. They both had partners. Neither was married. Both of them had, but they were good friends, good colleagues in the same department, and they enjoyed each other, and they chatted together a lot, and would often have lunch together and so on. And then both of their relationships broke up quite around the same time. And the woman was particularly injured by it all and very temporarily, at least, in a state of depression over it. And it occurred to her, well, and she put it to her friend, I know all of this because they were both good friends of mine. And the male ultimately imparted this to me rather than the woman. Though later on I did discuss it with her as well. At any rate, she said to him, look, we're both lonely. We've both had a real loss and we feel it badly. And we've been good friends for some time. And, you know, I mean, you're a man, I'm a woman. And why don't we? And he, as he told it to me, he felt, well, there's something off on that. He couldn't easily and just enthusiastically jump into the new offered relationship, but he did. And came the crucial occasion. They went out for dinner with the clear understanding that then they would spend the night together after that. And they came back to his place, as I remember it, and they went through all the motions. There they were in bed together, properly disrobed, and they broke into uncontrollable laughter. Both of them.
I believe it.
And they couldn't stop laughing, and they felt the whole situation was ludicrous, was utterly maniacally funny, and so they got up and got dressed again, and that was the end of it.
That's great.
What do you make of that?
I see some truth in it. A similar thing happened on the TV show Friends, actually.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, when Rachel and Joey try to get together, and I think it's this idea of when you think of someone as such a close friend and you really do have a platonic friendship, to try to take it to the next level, especially so consciously as that, as to make this decision, it can feel so, I would imagine, feel so forced and contrived that that all you can do is laugh.
Yeah.
I believe it.
I wonder if anyone listening has had that experience. But at any rate, I don't think we'll have time to find out. We only have about 2 or 3 minutes left. So what are your further reflections on all of this? Do you think you'll keep these people, some of the ones who've somehow worked out well? How many are there, by the way? 5, 10?
I would say, I'm guessing about 15.
15. Well, you've done very well.
Yeah.
5 years from now, will they all still be your friends, unless they've moved out of town?
I hope so. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe 5 years from now, 8 to 10 are. You know, as we've talked about, not all friendships stand the test of time, and people do move. And I'm at a place in my life where a lot of people around my age are probably having kids and moving out to the suburbs, and priorities shift when you start families, of course, and not all friendships always survive. So I think if in 5 years I have 8 to 10 out of these 52 in my life, I'll count myself pretty lucky.
Have you ever thought to bring these people together in one assembly?
I have. I did that. In fact, I met a bunch of women who responded to that want ad. So yeah, they all were in the same position. They had all moved here and they were all looking for new friends. And so I started a cooking group, and we met one night for a dinner party, and then now we do it every month, and we spent New Year's Eve together, and now we hang out pretty much every week. They've become each other's best friends in the city.
So the name of the group is Friends of Rachel, I suppose.
It should be. F-O-R, Friends of Rachel.
Friends of Rachel. Well, I want you to count me as a friend. But if you, but there is a difference. A difference in our age and a difference, obviously, in our genders, as they say these days. But then that's interesting too, isn't it? Friendships can form across sexual lines between people of considerable distance in age grade.
Yes, I think that definitely, you know, can take out the sexual tension factor, certainly.
Some of my good female friends are pretty good. I'm still in touch with them, are my former graduate students, who are people in their, by now, 30s, or some maybe entering their 40s, and I'm considerably older than that.
That's so interesting. And yeah, I think once that kind of, that element is removed and no one's worrying about that fact,
yeah,
you know, I do believe that we can have platonic friendships and that there's a lot to be gained from friendships across gender lines.
Wonderful. Well, I've enjoyed this tremendously. Thank you so much for coming tonight. Rachel Birchie's new book, to give its full title once again, is MWF. That's Married White Female Seeking BFF. That's Best Friend Forever. And that is just recently published by Ballantine Books. We'll be back tomorrow for a full two-hour program, 10 to midnight. My guest is a man who's an expert on invented languages, Klingon and Esperanto and 10 or 12 or 15 others. And we'll hear some of those invented languages and talk about how you can organize and develop a language that really works and takes off. That's tomorrow at 10. Until then, thanks to all for listening, and a most cordial good night.